there's been an awful lot in the news about something that they call the recession, and so it just made sense to go and get it from a source to find out how small businesses are responding to recessions. And I had the great pleasure, a very good friend of mine, to meet Jerry Crawley, who is the president, owner,
founder,
et cetera, of ARC General Contracting. So first of all, Jerry, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Before we get into the discussion of where you are now, tell me how you got here. What were you before and how long have you been doing it?
I started off my young life working in a public company. Worked for Cisco, S-Y-S-C-O, New York Stock Exchange Company. Worked there for 20 years. Did some construction work for them from the management level or from the owner side, managing construction projects. And then I'd been involved with general contracting when I was in high school and college, and I don't know, it just stuck for me, and I kept doing it. So after I left that public company environment, I tried a couple of different things, frankly struggled once or twice, and then started ARC about 10 years ago.
And you do general contracting?
Yes, commercial.
Specifically the areas that you focus on?
Retail shopping centers, small retail spaces. We've done medical and professional and doctor, dentist projects. We also have a great history in our company of building restaurants, both from, as I tell people, from white tablecloth to the white styrofoam takeout box. We've built one of just about every restaurant venue. In fact, we've built over 80 of them. So that's always been a part of our experience, and it's part of who we market.
Your footprint is pretty much Kansas City area?
Yes. I have worked in, for the right client, we would travel, depending on the circumstances and if it made sense for both them and us. Often when you travel, it just doesn't make sense financially.
Let's talk about the company a little bit. How big a company is it? Not necessarily by dollars, but by employees.
Like many, experienced somewhat of a click down in our number of employees. Last year at this time, we would have had approximately 22, and I think our employee count today is right around 15 or 16. So now our sales are off considerably more, but we're starting to feel the market kind of turn around for us. I can't speak for others, but, you know, if you let everyone go or if you cut back too far, then you wind up not being able to service or not be able to respond to opportunities.
Yeah, the projects that you do get in.
Exactly.
Yeah. Over the 10 years, do you consider this a successful company?
Yes. We've had some really great years. We've had the first two or three years of any company are indeed a struggle. What I've finally figured out was that I couldn't do it all myself. I needed to find and hire and incorporate the right people in my business plan. And really, I think me identifying those people and then bringing them on board is more about, it has more to do with my success than anything that I personally did, other than make this mental decision that I didn't know it all or I couldn't do it all or... I think every entrepreneur believes that he can do everything himself better than everyone else.
I think that's called the E-myth, and I think that there's well-documented cases of that all through history.
I've read that book.
This doesn't resemble me at all.
Exactly.
I also noticed, just on a size comparison on the way through the offices, that you're 24th largest, according to some list, in Kansas City.
Yes, there is the Kansas City Business Journal. Is for many years put out, you know, the top 25 law firms or the top 25 accounting CPA firms. And so for general contracting, there is a list, and that's ranked by dollars of billings or dollar annual sales. We were number 24 of 25 in 2007 and subsequently in 2008 as well. So now, one small qualifier there, that list is only as good or as complete as those who complete the survey. So I don't know what the margin of error is there, but I'm sure there is one. There were some general contracting firms who did not report that had reported in the past, and so that might have skewed our placement on the top 25 list. I'm trying to be not humble, but factual.
Okay. Well, last fall, it got a little bumpy.
Oh, yes.
And I know you and I had a conversation before that it really caused you to look at your business and, more importantly, yourself much differently.
Yes.
I wonder if you could share a little bit of that with us.
Well, I think like many business owners, because I've talked to a number of people in the past, been almost a year now, but certainly in the past 9 months, I haven't met anyone yet who's a business owner or an entrepreneur or a developer or a real estate broker who hasn't really done some soul searching and said, wow, the ground rules have changed. So I can either A, ride out the storm and continue doing business as I've always done business, whatever that may be, or I can treat this like the dinosaur and kind of buried my head in the sand, and when the asteroid hits, I'm gone. Or you can change. And so I decided to really take a look at who are we, why are we here, and what is our purpose? The simplest thing to do, or the most tempting thing to do in time like this, is just sell out and move on. And
yeah, cut your losses.
Go to Florida or whatever. Pick a state. But, you know, when I look at my employees and when I look at their families and when I look at sort of the goodwill that I've built up over the years, that's a lot to give up. I made a decision that we needed to change. We did that in a couple of different ways. We contracted with someone named Caroline Smith, who's action coach, kind of a business coach leader, not a personal coach, nor a consultant, but she's been here off and on for the past 6 months, kind of coaching us through some of our activities, some of the ways that we looked at business, some of the ways that we were trying to define ourselves. And at the end of the day, there's no magic to any of this. You just really have to ask yourself these questions. Who are we and why are we doing this? And from there, we've created a one-page strategic plan that we use to look at our progress every day. There's no big three-ring binder, you know. We don't have some extensive reporting system. We meet and talk at least twice a week, if not more often, about where are we and where are we going. We know who we are now. And so what this has done, I think, is just streamlined our whole effort and made everybody's objectives more pure and simple and clean. It's like all the chaff went away. You know, all the white fuzzy stuff went away. So, you know, we're in business to make money. We're in business to be profitable. And we're in business to create a company that I can pass on to future employees. You know, I may never own any blue cranes like J.E. Dunn. Nor do I need to, but I do need to be responsible to my family, the families of my employees, and so for me, that's kind of the defining thing.
Yeah,
it would have been very simple to just like close the door and pull the hatch and pull the ripcord and bail out.
Was that more a function of reality for you at that point for the business, or was it a function of what was going on inside your own head and heart?
My wife has asked me this question many times. Along about November of last year, when things were probably at their darkest, November, December, I came to the conclusion that there's really no option other than to be a success. You just have to work your way through this. Whatever this is, you got to work your way through it. It's pretty simple at the end of the day. So that's my choice. I can't find any reason to allow failure. I just can't.
Was that a big change of mind for you?
No, I think what happens, I think the other biggest single thing that I felt from that first 6 months, let's say from September to February, was your confidence gets completely shattered. And you really do ask yourself the question, why am I doing this? That's why I think the one page kind of strategic plan, and it's in a book, or Caroline can coach you to it. It's in a book called The Rockefeller Habit. Apparently, Mr. Rockefeller used a one-page plan to plan out his entire life. He hit 5-year goals, immediate goals, 10-year goals. He always knew where he was going. And when your confidence gets shattered, that's the one element you do not want missing, is where am I going? So from that, it just got easier. You know, once you started putting one foot in front of the other foot, in front of the other foot, because I think fear is immobilizing. If you remember the first Gulf War, do you remember how everyone stayed at home and watched their television?
They're glued to CNN.
Exactly. All the restaurants, sales way off. Retailers, people weren't going to anything. They weren't even going to church anymore. I mean, it was crazy. And that was because they were immobilized by fear. Well, as it turned out, it was a 7-day war. I mean, let's face it, I don't want to talk about the morality of it or the immorality of it, but it was over pretty quickly. The result matched the planning. Same thing with my business. If you're immobilized by fear, you're not planning, you're not executing.
Just reacting.
Yeah, you're reacting, and I've done that. That's not fun. No. It's not profitable either.
No. How do you think that period before you kind of got it together and set that direction straight, how were your employees acting?
Oh, they were, your employees, that's a great question, Jay. Your employees pick up clues from you and from your attitude almost as if they were pheromones. I mean, they can smell fear. Your employees can smell when you're uncertain. You don't have to say it in a meeting. You don't have to express it. They can smell it. And then they get scared. And then they become non-planning, non-functioning. They become immobilized. I mean, it was a real tragedy here for probably 90 days where everybody's just wringing their hands mentally, if not outwardly, going, what's going to happen? When I eliminated the choice of failure, then it got better. So, you know, we had meeting after meeting where we talked about how we were going to try to manage ourselves through this. And I met with the employees often and said, hey, I don't know how we're going to do this, but we're going to do it. And you know what? We did it. We kept everybody working, and that's an accomplishment.
You bet it is.
That's an accomplishment. I mean, many industries just laid people off because they could.
Yeah, even if they weren't necessarily having bad times.
Exactly. Hey, I can get rid of 10 people this week because...
It's the economy.
It's the economy. I don't have to... They're not going to be mad at me.
I wonder if that comes from having so many layers of management insulation from...
Oh, totally.
...from the front line. I mean, it just seems to me so much easier to fire 4 people rather than saying, okay, I need to get rid of Bob, Larry, June, and George.
I would challenge anyone who is considering layoffs and having met the family of the person about to be laid off. I would challenge anyone to look that person in the eye and say, man, this is the right thing. It's just too hard. Maybe if I didn't know all the employees and I didn't know their families and their wives and their children, I mean, I even know how many dogs they have. I mean, good grief. To me, that is the problem with large corporations, is that you're so distant. You know, our management hierarchy here is pretty flat. If you want to talk to me, you can get a hold of me. If you want to talk to a superintendent, you can get a hold of him. If the superintendent wants to call me, he can get a hold of me. If our laborer wants to call me, he can call me at home at night. I mean, that's the nice part about having kind of a flatline hierarchy, and you don't get that in all organizations. You just don't.
My guest is Jerry Crawley. We're talking about a number of things, and his company is ARC General Contracting. Jerry, I want to get a little bit back to some of those things that Caroline took you through, because that to me is very interesting. Because you'd run companies, you'd work for other companies, there was some of this stuff that was, I'm not going to say it was common sense, but obviously it takes sometimes somebody who is not getting caught up in the trees to be able to see the forest.
Well, actually, there are two things. In my years with Cisco, they never called it a budget, and they never called it our business plan. They always called it our profit plan. They never made any bones about the fact that they were out to make a profit, which is the foundation of all small business. Maybe that's a little twist, but it's not a budget. It's not our budgetary plan for next year. It's not our expense control plan. It can't be any of those things. It's sales times the margin minus the expenses. It's really simple stuff. Part of it is a trick for your mind. It's a profit plan. If you don't plan to make a profit, why do this? There's no exposure like the exposure that you get in a public company in terms of ethics and all the documents they have to sign and the many, many layers of personalities and people. Meeting Caroline, who had also come from that environment. I think she'd worked for Travelocity and helped them get their initial search engines going. And you know, she's a programmer and an engineer by training. And she found out she wasn't happy doing that. She's like, wow, I really like working with people. Well, if you really like working with people, then you probably shouldn't be a programmer or you probably shouldn't be an engineer because you're dealing with a function. She found she had a skill set, so she brought that here. What you find out is that your business is much simpler than you thought it was, and it's much more easy to modify. Most of the problems with your business, frankly, are you the owner. If I wrote down our strengths, our weaknesses, our opportunities, and our threats, all of the weaknesses were my management weaknesses. for me, it was like a huge mirror.
Yeah, how was that to take? Did you have any pushback on that initially?
Well, no, it was a little humbling, and I thought to myself, it took me about a month or so before I finally recognized it. When I looked at our company's strengths, then I looked at our weaknesses, all the weaknesses were me, the ownership, projecting myself into the company. Strange. Threats, you can overcome a threat. Opportunities, that's what we're all looking for. That this simple SWOT thing, which is also part of the one-page strategic plan, was very eye-opening and humbling, by the way.
I was just going to ask you, what else did she help you see? We make it so much more complicated in our own heads and in our own on our own desks. How was she able to come to that for you?
I think that she spent a little time interviewing all the employees, and I really thought that I had a pretty happy set of employees. You know, we have a 401k, and we pay good wages, and we have a good health plan.
And good people.
And I have good people, and I just thought they were all happy. Well, I found out that there was some unhappiness, and I found out that that was limiting us from getting over this fear factor and getting our mind onto the things that really matter. You can call them personality rifts, or you can call them issues between or mostly they're about communication, something you said that didn't translate well. Which is another famous owner foible. You say something, you don't realize that they have taken it out of context.
Oh, and it always surprises me.
Totally misread it. You may be even saying something in jest, and it gets read as being serious. But after she interviewed our employees, she came back, and we identified three or four things that were wrong with kind of our team. And when we fix those, there's kind of a blossoming, you know, we kind of pulled apart the things and then reassembled the things that weren't working. And again, most of them were things that I had allowed to happen or had perpetuated, some of them unknowingly. Most of them are tiny things, but
they add up.
They add up. Yeah, death by 1,000 razor blades, as my old friend used to say, death by 1,000 cuts. We kind of fixed the employees and kind of their attitude, and then we all got focused on the same goals. And they're really, again, because they're one page, they're not in a three-ring binder.
So this isn't something just for your own edification. This was something to share.
Oh, I share it with every employee.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, even the lowest paid employee or the newest employee in our company looks at our financial statement, and they may not be able to read it, and I understand that. But if they know that I have no reason to keep a secret from them, then shouldn't that take their fear away? I've always been very honest and always been very open. When we talk about health benefits or when we talk about our profit plan for the following year, we talk about performance now, they know. I share it with them maybe not once a month, but at least certainly once a quarter. In doing so, I think what you hope to create is an environment of trust. Your employees have to trust you. Your customers have to trust you. Your suppliers and associates and vendors or subcontractors, whatever you're using. If there's no trust, that's really hard to make a positive impact in your business. That's my personal philosophy. It may not work for everyone, but that's my personal one. You know, I don't have to worry. I can sleep very well at night because I know I have no secrets. There's a bunch of freedom in that. And then when times are good, we share. I mean, we have a profit-sharing device that's attached on top of our 401k through a 401k safe harbor plan. So it's not as if I'm encouraging them to make more money so that I can then keep it.
There's benefit.
There's benefit to them, yes, absolutely.
Let me ask you about ARC in general. Has this period of reevaluation and learning that you went through, has that fundamentally changed what you do?
Yes. When the whole world went off its axis last September and October, you know, nobody knew what the fallout was going to be. Not completely. I mean, it looked pretty grim for a long time. You know, what I finally came to for me was I determined that for me it was not a crisis. It was not a business crisis. It was a crisis of faith. Who are you? What do you believe in? And why are you doing this? If you can't answer those questions conclusively, I don't know how you can manage through this. There are days, even now, when I ask myself, why am I doing this? Then I get out my one-page plan. I'll look at our company. I'll look at our core values. I look at our goals. I look at our mission statement. I look at those things, and I say, okay, this is why I'm doing this. And I close my one-page plan, and I go back to work.
Does your breathing change?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, obviously, there are many people in the world who are far more successful than me and will be far more successful than I have been up to this point. But I have learned a great deal, and I think that this is the perfect time for you as a business owner to find out who you are. It's not about the marketplace. It's really about how am I going to now address the marketplace? What else is there? I mean, clients, people still buy from people. You can't buy everything off the internet.
It's true.
I mean, I'll give someone credit here. Dan Loeb at Red Development said, hey, this is the time to make relationships, and this is the time to strengthen all relationships. He said that a year and a half ago.
It's also about character building right now, it
absolutely
seems to me.
Absolutely. So that's what we've been working on. It's really, after we sort of got our head out of the fog and got our head out of the sand to some degree, we said, hey, wait a minute. What fundamentally works? Making new relationships or firming up old relationships, going back and revisiting old relationships. I think that's how we're getting through this. And we have more work now than we've had in probably the past 18 months. We have 19 or 20 projects to build right now.
One of the things, just to bring this back full circle, that you said to me when we first got together today was the recession's over.
Yes. I'm a firm believer in that. I know that you, Jay, may not personally agree with that.
It's not that I don't. I'm only smiling because I'm wondering how much of that is based on reality and how much it is based on attitude.
Well, for me, it's all about the attitude. I can only impact my own reality, but I try to tell people, and I really believe that since March 6th, whatever that magic day was, the recession has truly, officially, at least in my mind, been over. And I'm telling people, hey, we're into recovery. We're seeing things. We're seeing more things happen. We're seeing people starting. We're seeing projects come back on board that have been shelved for a while. We're seeing more optimism amongst our banking community friends. We're seeing more optimism amongst our real estate and broker and commercial developer friends. I mean, there's still some scary times out there, and I'm sure this is probably going to be an elliptical orbit. It's not going to be perfectly round, so there may be some more dips. I mean, if you look at all other recessions, there have been inclines, then short declines, then inclines. I don't know that all the symptoms are over, but I think we've survived the disease.
Service over self-interest.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a mission statement for your company?
That's our kind of our slogan, your motto. I actually read this in a magazine called Restaurant News. It's been some 4 or 5 years ago. A very young woman who is maybe in her mid-20s, I wish I could remember her name, who said, we are stewards. And stewardship is all about service over self-interest. Now, she said a mouthful.
Yeah.
Because, you see, no matter what you and I do, it's never really your money and it's never really my money. When I build a project for my client, I'm the steward of their money or their dollars, their capital expenditures, until that project's complete. It's never really mine. And if most businesses would care to admit it, you're really just a big ATM machine. Unlicensed, you know. Money comes in, you keep a little, your service fees, so to speak, and money goes out. So who's kidding who here? There's no get-rich-quick device that I'm aware of. Service over self-interest to me means my industry has a reputation, which I've tried to outlive for maybe being cavalier or gouging people or taking advantage of a client's non-familiarity or underexposure to the whole construction process, because it is confusing. It's confusing to me sometimes. Can I say this? Well, the cities have made it more confusing. I'll just say it. Okay. Anyway, because every city treats construction different, every little township, whatever, and in St. Louis, far worse than here. Contracting does have a reputation for unfulfilled promises, and I'm trying to outlive that. I'm just one guy, though.
That's right.
But I'm trying to outlive that reputation, at least for our company.
Would you say, and this is going to sound like a really set up easy question, but would you say that you're better off for going through this whole process? Is ARC a stronger company from going through this little dip?
Oh, absolutely. I was in Houston, Texas in 1985 when the oil market crashed, $8.50 a barrel. 350,000 people moved out of Houston, Texas in like 12 months' time. I had a friend who owned a moving van line business who said, Jerry, what no one ever told you was that during the following year, 350,000 people moved back into Houston, Texas. And I moved a lot of them because big companies said, wow, here's some really cheap housing for our employees and here's some really cheap office space. Let's relocate to Houston. He said, so when it was declining, he goes, I cut all the expenses. I did all. And he goes, I realized how much waste was in my company. When it turned around and it came back, I made more money than I ever made in my entire life. So, I mean, there's a great illustration, not just for me. Yes, we've cut back. Yeah, we don't do we don't do some of the things that we used to do here. We've trimmed our expenses. That's what times like this do. It make you reevaluate.
Are you better equipped to help your customers?
There have been a lot of advances in technology. You know, I mean, so much of what we do now is done electronically or digitally. My business has always been very paperwork intensive. Lots of rolls of plans and documents. And now that they're digitized, I mean, we're probably, just my small company's probably killing 10,000 less trees a year. I mean, it's amazing the amount of paper that's generated in any office environment, but ours particularly. We've done more things electronically. We've shared, we've set up kind of networking FTTP sites for our subcontractors and vendor community. And that saved them driving here to pick up a set of plans or coming to our office repeatedly, sometimes each week. So we can share these things electronically through an Adobe PDF file. We can't change the document, which is good, but they can have access to it. It's not only improved their productivity, I'm sure it's contributed even in a small way, perhaps, to the betterment of the environment.
And that's a good thing. So obviously you're holding down costs. You're more streamlined.
To spend about $35,000 to $40,000 a year on blueprinting. It's a tragic number. You know, if you want to extrapolate that, use the rate of 11 cents per square foot and divide that into $40,000, and that'll tell you how many square feet of paper we went through in a year. It's tragic. The only really crushing thing about electronic devices and digital paperwork and digital officing is that if you ever suffer a power loss or a system crash, you're like, oh, man.
Or don't know where you lost that power cord.
Exactly. I can't remember the last time we sent out a fax. I mean,
somebody asked me for a fax the other day. I was like, seriously?
Exactly. Those things are going to be a thing of the past. And one of the things that I was adamantly opposed to was the BlackBerry phone. I love it. I can't believe I survived for as long as I did without this kind of multimedia phone device. It's incredibly productive. Unbelievably so.
I appreciate your time today. It's fascinating to hear not only about your company, but also just a real personal story about what you went through and how you came out the other side. So continued success to you. Best of luck. And we'll look for ARC signs all over town on rebound that's coming.
Thanks, Jay.